Justin Sullivan of New Model Army. Welcome to the Mouthcast. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm all right. Thanks very much.
Excellent.
It's a very beautiful day here. Very springy and warm, and we're in Bremen today.
Lovely, lovely. Before we get stuck in and talk about New Model Army, let's have a listen to something from the latest album. I have to say the last two New Model Army albums, between Dog and Wolf and Winter, are amongst the very best that the band has made, so it's a real pleasure to play this particular track. This is the title track from the latest album. This is Winter.
www.themouthmagazine.com
Well, I dreamed that I was running through a wilderness of plenty, and I could hear the hunt behind me getting closer, getting closer. And I knew that the end was coming, and I wished that it was over. Bring me the snowfall, bring me the cold wind, bring me the winter. And now the mercury keeps rising, like the sap and the blood in the oceans, and the ash belt acres melting in the fetid air of poison. And I could hear the soldiers coming, and I wished that it was over. Bring me the snowfall, bring me the cold wind, bring me the winter. Felt them tugging at my shoulder to come and join in the celebrations to mark the triumph of the emperor. The old conquering everlasting summer, and the streets were washed with the blood of the innocent sacrifice to slaughter, and the crowds all drunk with power and madness as the noise grew ever louder. And I could hear the knives being sharpened, and then I wished that it was over. Bring me the snowfall, bring me the cold wind, bring me the snowfall, bring me the winter. And all the sins of the past be buried in the frozen ground, but the last of the vengeance fires die. The black winds flying high above the skeleton trees disappear into the So let the weary land be rested, and the killing season over. Let the shadows stretch forever in the light of burnished silver. For I fear the age of consequence, and I wish that it was over. Yes, I fear the age of consequence, and I wish that it was over. Yes, I fear. Bring me the cold wind, bring me the snowfall, bring me the cold wind, bring me the winter.
J- Justin, that was Winter, the title track from the latest album. We'll hear something from Between Dog and Wolf a little bit later on. And these last two New Model Army albums have seen a bit of a shift in sound. They're textural and there's a particular atmosphere there which I'm not sure I've heard in too much of your previous work. Dare I use the word mature?
Oh, God, mature sounds a bit frightening. There is an album in between as well, which is often overlooked, which is Between Warmth and Blood, which was a kind of continuation of Between Dog and Wolf, and it was meant to be a live album, but then when we were releasing it, we wrote six more songs, so there's six studio tracks on it as well. That was done in the same way as Dog and Wolf, and we sort of layered it up, and then we gave it to Joe Barresi in Los Angeles to mix in the same way that we did with Dog and Wolf. I think what happened is we got serious about making records. We were a bit tired of writing songs very much designed, you know, for a live band, and then going into the studio and recording them, you know, not always particularly well or not always particularly well mixed. We'd done a sort of bit of a run at that. And then there were a few changes around 2010, 11, 12. We lost our studio. Everything got burned down. Our long-time manager died. We had to start looking after ourselves a bit. And our bass player, Nelson, had been with us a long time, left, which was kind of sort of friendly leave. We'd been talking about it for a long time. And we got in a new guy called Kerry Munger on bass and also second drummer. He's very young, and that's given us a sort of an impetus, I think. But also myself and Michael, who's my main partner in the band, really have been talking about making a kind of studio album, layering up drums, which is something we'd touched on before. And we thought, let's just experiment with all sorts of different stuff we can do. We won't have a producer, we'll produce it ourselves, so we can go up all sorts of blind alleys and take our time. But we will give it to one of the world's greatest mixers to mix. And it sort of worked. And so we then repeated the trick with Between Wine and Blood, a mini album, the same thing. And the other thing is, on the last three albums, we've gone back to recording on tape, which makes a huge difference, I think. A lot of people, we stopped recording on tape at the end of the 90s. Started recording on computers, but now we've gone back to tape, and it does make a huge difference to the sound. It makes everything bigger, fatter, and warmer. There's 1,000 computer programs that say they sound just like tape, and they're under.
Does it make a difference to the process as well? I hate that word, but does it make a difference to the process?
Not really, no. It just makes a different sound.
Yeah.
From the very beginning process. And then with having those two albums, and Barresi gave them this kind of amazing, expansive, very beautiful, very sophisticated, very expensive sounding mix, which was a while since we'd made a really expensive sounding record. That worked very well for us. But having done that sort of 1.5 times, we thought, now let's do the opposite. Now let's make the sound of a very loud band in a very small room,
yeah,
without very much effect. And we discovered a studio near us, actually. It's in Leeds. Small kind of rock studio. Unlike every other punk rock studio I've ever been in, though, everything works. But it's full of old equipment, old microphones, old tape machines, everything like that. And we did it there quite quickly. And we had thought about mixing it elsewhere, but in the end, we got one of the guys that works there to mix it, because he really understood what we were trying to do, which was make a kind of sort of quite in-your-face, not too affected, not too compressed, sort of naturalistic but loud-sounding album. And it kind of worked. I think we just got serious about making records again. I think that for a while we were recording songs with a view to going out on tour and stuff, but now we've got a bit more serious about making records. Just at the time when everybody says, is the album dead? No one's interested in albums anymore. But actually, I'm not sure if it's true.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that resurgence in vinyl is in some way responsible for that, actually. But I mentioned the word maturity earlier, which often suggests letting go of certain principles, or if not letting go of them, then a sort of softening. And I don't think that's the case here. You've just framed your words.
Maturity, I ought to be got there. I'm 60, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But then Kerry's in his 20s, or he was when we recorded those albums.
But I don't think you've let go of the principles. They're obviously still there. You're just framing them in a slightly different way.
No, not at all. We're still as awkward as ever, in the sense we're not interested in what anybody wants from us. We're interested in what we want to do. And that's always been a kind of guiding principle of the band. As soon as someone found us a box to put us in, our sort of first inclination was to try to jump out of the box by doing the opposite. Or whatever songs everybody says, oh, they're your greatest songs, you need to play them. And we think, oh, in that case, we won't play them, we'll play something else. It's a kind of punk rock instinct, really, always to go the opposite to what people say they want from us.
Yeah.
And just to follow our own star. There's something Neil Young said in an interview I once saw. He said, if you just follow your own star for long enough, eventually people learn to trust you. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Last night I sat and watched that fairly recent career-spanning documentary, which is also called Between Dog and Wolf, incidentally, and I was reminded of how vividly your principles have been related throughout the band's history. So did that strength of purpose come from punk?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it was the attitude. The terrible thing about punk is it's come to mean form of music,
yeah,
which is to do with playing four chords and shouting a lot. But it wasn't that. If I remember the late 70s and early 80s, and especially everything that came in the after the punk heyday, basically what it did, it swept away, musically, it swept away all the rules. In the 70s, there were rules about how rock bands had to make records. And then with punk, a lot of bands went back to the sort of basic principles of garagey stuff, which was cool. But in the wake of that, everyone, okay, there aren't any rules. So Banshees went off with lots of weird chords, and Killing Joke went off with this kind of primal drive. And then there's all the electronic stuff that came out. We started, and I could play a few chords on the guitar, but I wasn't a great guitar player. And Stuart Morrow, a great bass player. So we thought, okay, we'll make the bass the lead instrument. Why not? You know, there aren't any rules. We can do what we like. So that's one thing. The other thing was the sort of punk attitude was that whatever they want from you, give them the opposite. You know what I mean? Sort
yeah.
of, and never go the easy way. Always just do what you want.
Yeah.
And I think it was always to do with the spirit with which you do stuff is more important than the expertise. Well, that's how it started. I think it's a shame that people enshrine that as a kind of expertise is bad. You know, I still think spirit's more important than expertise, but obviously expertise is quite interesting as you learn more about music, open more and more and more doors, which is where I think that it's sad that punk became identified with a form, a very limited form of music that's deliberately limited. It's kind of boring, really.
Yeah, it became a cartoon, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
I was also interested, you mentioned Stuart Morrow, the band's original bass player and other founding member. I was really interested also, actually, that in the documentary, he mentioned that you were a big Springsteen fan when you met back in the 70s. I'm guessing, but I imagine the sort of dignity and integrity found in Springsteen's work and his approach to his work was a source for you in some way, as much as punk was.
Yeah, I guess so. I just like the music, really.
Okay.
I thought Born to Run was just a great album. I thought it was a great album. It's full of good story writing and interesting, you know, music. A lot of soul in it. It's kind of a combination of that sort of rock and soul. Funnily enough, I haven't been listening to Bruce Springsteen that much in recent years, but then a friend bought me his autobiography, and I don't read a lot of band autobiographies, but his is quite recent, and it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's very honest. And it's that kind of blue-collar roots that he comes from, troubled blue-collar background, that's very much part of him. He didn't quite fit in anywhere. And also, as he got more and more and more successful, he got less and less happy.
Yes.
And that kind of journey was... And that journey, I do remember that happening when we were at our biggest in the early 90s. That was when I was least happy. And then eventually you sort of learn to follow your own star and find a different way. I am an admirer of his, actually. He has that... He often talks about it as if it's kind of... It's a bit of an anachronism in rock music, which is that kind of blue-collar work ethic that you have to put the hours in. I sort of adhere to that. I don't come from the same kind of background, but I do adhere to the work ethic. If you, whatever you want to do in life, you can do more or less anything, but you have to put the hours in. That's what I always tell young people.
Yeah, yeah. You also mentioned soul earlier on in relation to his book, and I think that's...
Yeah, that's another... This is another thing in the sense that you know, New Malami's sort of known as being a rock band with, you know, folk influences or whatever. Actually, my roots are more in Tamil Motown and Northern Soul than anything else. And there is a huge amount of that in New Malami, but people aren't looking for it, so they don't see it. And that's by me. I mean, And no one really knows what New Model Army is. And I remember a few years ago, we played a punk festival followed by a metal festival, followed by a folk festival, followed by a hippie festival, followed by a goth festival, all with basically the same set. Sort of fits everywhere and nowhere.
Late afternoon in winter time, on the edge of the city, the incinerator towers are breathing out into the cold. The birds are making spirals high above the neon skyline, across the drifting swirl of charcoal and gold. Islands in silver sea, land falls into shadow. These are more real for me. And all that I leave behind, if I could only choose one moment to last forever, I would be here with you.
Between dog and wall, between water.
That integrity, if you like, that the band has always had served you well during the 80s, I think, which was a difficult, difficult time. It's funny how the word Thatcher is bigger than, but immediately points to the miner strike, the IRA, Falklands, Hillsborough, the poll tax. They were not happy days, yet I'm reminded when I think of that decade, and it may be my age because it's, you know, that was my teenage years, of the opening line of A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Do you feel that the current political climate is comparable to the 80s? Do you feel like...
No.
No, okay.
It's not like comparable to the 80s. I mean, it's much more like, you know, from what I understand, reading, it's not quite like the 30s either, but it's heading that way. I think that the beginning of the 80s, it was the beginning of the era of unlimited globalized capitalism.
Yeah.
So the philosophy was that if you allow money to be do what money does and you allow it to be free, we'll all get rich. And this has been the only political economic philosophy in the West for 30 years. It's been largely unchallenged. And now that's come to an end. It is being challenged on all sides, predominantly from the right. But it's like a time, perhaps like the 80s, when perhaps the end of a kind of hope, the idea of a sort of socialized democracy of the 60s and 70s, that kind of hope came to an end. And we entered an era of vicious globalized capitalism. And now that's coming to an end. We're entering something else. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet.
Because
scary times.
We heard the song Winter at the top of the podcast, and there's a line in it which has always seemed to me as if it might be about late 20th, early 21st century capitalism. The line, I dreamed that I was running through a wilderness of plenty.
Yeah. There's a line that I stole at the end of the song, which I read it in a paper somewhere. We're entering the age of consequence.
Yeah, very good.
I nicked the line, but I just feel like that. That the activities of mankind, and particularly the West, over the last century, now we're going to start having the legacy of that.
Yeah, we're going to pay for it, I think.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
You spend a lot of time in Europe, and as we said earlier, you're in Bremen, Germany, as we speak. Article 50 is triggered this week by Theresa May's government. Where are you at with Brexit?
my instinct is complete. It's nonsense, but it's happening.
Yeah.
So it's dumb. It is completely dumb, but it's happening. So now the question, you know, what sort of Brexit? I suppose. I mean, my instinct, you know, I generally don't think walls and fences are very good things. You know, we all jumped for joy when the Berlin Wall came down, and rightfully so. And now we're all talking about building new ones.
I know, it's incredible how that wheel has turned, isn't it? How that's the case,
yeah.
25 years
yeah.
on.
Yeah. I mean, Brexit, Theresa May's government are kind of being pushed and pushed and pushed by the Daily Mail and the sort of the right-wing agenda to go for the full, we can turn the clock back to the 1950s and we can... I mean, there was a good reason that the UK beseeched and petitioned and begged to join the EU back in 1970, whenever it was. It's because Britain was broke. It couldn't go it alone, you know. And there was a good reason for that, you know. But people sort of have forgotten all this, really. And there is all this. There is all this stuff wherever you go. There's, you know, make France great again, make Britain great again, and then Trump's, you know, make America great again. Have we forgotten where all that shit leads?
Yeah. So, do you think there's a need in these times when that is happening for some sort of resurgence of the protest singer? Because it feels to me like, I mean, I know we've got Twitter and social media, and people to some extent have freedom of speech.
Well, but... in the West, we've had relative freedom of speech for quite a long time. But the problem is, one of the problems with social media is you tend to end up in ghettos.
Yes, yeah.
Surrounded by people that agree to you. This is why, you know, people in and around London and stuff couldn't believe that the country had voted for Brexit. At the moment the referendum was announced, we kind of knew what was going to happen. I mean, Winter, and the Winter album was written against the backdrop of knowing what was coming. And actually, we finished it last year, and I didn't want to listen to it for a couple of months. And then I put it on the morning after Brexit, and I thought, yeah, that's it at the moment.
So you just mentioned ghettoisation. New Model Army fans are extremely dedicated, and I've seen that from way back when, and to some, perhaps on the outside of that, it might feel like a club that they can't get into, but I'm not sure that's the case, because it's a very accepting audience.
People have a strange idea, because we've got a very dedicated audience. They imagine, you know, that very much identify with the band, and I think that's because we're outside the mainstream, and because the material's about something. Exactly what it's about is a bit more nebulous. There isn't actually a political agenda at all, but it is about subjects, you know, politics, religion, Tories, people, you know. So it attracts a kind of very dedicated audience, but the audience isn't the same as it was. All the time, there's people dropping off and going, oh, you know, you don't play from the old hits from the 80s and I'm not interested anymore. And there's a whole new generation of people coming that don't really care about the old hits from the 80s. They want to hear what we're doing now. And so it's a sort of, it's a very dedicated audience, but it's sort of constantly regenerating. It's not a closed pub at all.
No.
It sort of regenerates. Every tour, there's a, you know, we've always had a kind of traveling following, but the people traveling and the people you see down in the front, you know, are different from tour to tour. People drop off, new people come. That's quite interesting, I think. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, I know what sort of person likes New Model Army. And I said, oh, really? Do tell me. And they said, people who are basically intelligent but trying to work through a large amount of personal darkness.
Okay. Okay.
I thought it was very funny.
Okay, I guess
maybe true.
I guess I'm interested to know whether you feel like you have a constituency, if you like, and whether awareness of
whether
power.
We feel we have a
constituency.
In what sense?
In the sense that you have a captive audience, people who will listen to what you're saying, and in fact,
no, it never enters our heads, actually. People, the first question I was asked when I remember doing the interviews of a few albums, and you do these kind of interview days. The first question often was, how do you think the fans will react to this album? And I have to say, it's always a question I'm not expecting. I haven't thought about it. We don't think about it at all. We just sort of make something we think is good. And that's about it.
Excellent. Well, I'm pleased to say that Winter and Between Dog and Wolf and the mini album that you mentioned are all great records. And we're going to play out with Pull the Sun from Between Dog and Wolf, which I think is a track which will surprise some of the people listening who think they know what New Model Army are and what New Model Army sound like. We talked at the start about the shift in sound, and I mentioned that although texturally the records were softer, they're in no way soft. They just frame your lyrics in a slightly different way. A new context, perhaps, is another way of putting it. Where do you see that going next for you? Is that something that you'd be exploring further, or are you itching to?
I think the Dog and Wolf opened various doors, but we always felt able to do anything. Perhaps we feel even more able to do anything now. You know, go anywhere that's. You know, when you're writing or creating anything, you sort of do everything by feel. Does this feel right? Does it feel good? You try stuff out, and some stuff we put out on records, even the records you've mentioned, you know, didn't quite come off. And sometimes you try for something and you hit it. Sometimes you try for something and it doesn't quite work, but it sort of half works. You know, when you look back sort of a couple of years later. I like Paul's song. I like the song very much. And when we've done it live, it goes in a slightly different direction because we don't have the, you know, there's five of us on stage. We don't have the massive multi-layered thing. So we alter it slightly. It's quite interesting when we had to do Dog and Wolf live because we then had to work out how to play it. And then it sort of everything changed and took on a slightly different life. In the old days, when you recorded songs, you know, you played them live for weeks and weeks and before you recorded them, but now unfortunately you can't do that because the moment you play news, it instantly circulates.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of a bang.
Well, Justin, thank you very much for your time. And after all these years, I'm very, very pleased that you are still saying things that need to be said, and so beautifully on the last few records. Justin Sullivan, thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
My favorite card that I draw every
www.themouthmagazine.com.